Hello and welcome to the first episode of the ZA Tech Show in 6 months. I must confess, we've been extremely bad here
six
at ZA
months.
Tech Show.
Feels like office. Yesterday.
Well, it does. This year's gone like a steam train, but 5 months. The last episode of the ZA Tech Show we recorded was published on the 5th of June 2015. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Of course, this is Mr. Stephen Ambrose sitting next to me. How
are
you doing, Mr. Ambrose?
All good. All good. Mad, manic end of the year, but otherwise great.
It has been a bit crazy. It's been a bit of a crazy time. But we're here. We're still doing stuff. I must apologize for the fact that it's been so long since we've done an episode of the ZA Tech Show, but I have been busy launching a new company and doing a whole bunch of new things. And unfortunately, that has demanded the lion's share of my attention. So without further ado,
or anything else.
Let's start speaking about some tech. What do you say? Absolutely.
Tech is where it's all at the moment.
Thankfully.
Seriously.
It's been so long since we recorded an episode. There's so much we can speak about. It's amazing.
It's like a blank book.
We can even speak about new iPhones. We can speak about pretty much every Samsung's launched some new Note devices.
Really?
Huawei's launched a whole bunch of new phones. It's been
But what's actually fascinating is how much action is still going on in the mobile space.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question that there's a lot of other tech out there, but it all seems to fall into the background because everyone's on about mobile phones.
Absolutely.
And more importantly, more and more, even in South Africa, what you can do on mobile phones.
Absolutely.
I mean, we may as well launch straight into that cool event we went to last night.
Yes, and this is... So we were obviously supposed to record this episode much earlier in the week, but Mr. Ambrose had a diary clash and it didn't work.
But hectic, anyway.
It was actually quite apt in terms of our rescheduling of the episode because last night we were at the WeChat wallet
launch.
And apart from a number of celebrities being there and a bunch of other cool activities, they essentially launched a wallet that is usable inside of WeChat, but also from the perspective of being able to accept payments, make payments and stuff like that within their ecosystem, break it out of that ecosystem, which I think is quite interesting. I'm struggling to see how this is vastly different from the majority of wallets out there in that...
It's not. Simple. It's no different to any other wallet. Mm. I think the only differentiator, according to Brett Laubscher, is that it's fully integrated into the platform. That's where there's perhaps... So I had Snapchat, for example, on my phone.
You mean SnapScan?
SnapScan, oops.
Let's not speak about the fact that you have Snapchat.
Yeah, no, and I can make myself vomit sparkly stuff.
You have SnapScan on your phone.
SnapScan.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of disjointed wallets and other assorted bits and pieces.
So Snapchat's actually not a wallet. Snapchat's just the ability. It's just a payment.
SnapScan is not a wallet.
SnapScan is not a wallet. Yeah. What it allows you to do is just make payments, right?
Correct.
A wallet is something that you can top up with funds.
Correct.
And then... pay for things, but at the same time accept money into it,
but what
withdraw,
I was saying is, I had all these various things on my phone, different apps for different things, one for payment, one for this, one for that. And what they've done into a messaging, and I think this has been their strategy from day one. We were actually discussing it last night. Do they make money? Probably not. Probably not. I mean, their growth in South Africa has been pretty good, but they've pushed hard. I mean, you've seen them on billboards. You've seen WeChat associate themselves with like guys like Cliff Central. They've done a lot of heavy marketing to get people to know it, whereas things like WhatsApp did no marketing, nothing.
Absolutely.
It was just viral. It just happened, and it works. So they've built up their however million. I mean, globally, I think they've got 600 million users.
Yeah, they still won't speak about what size their local base is.
But the last guesstimates were in the 5 to 7 million user range, which is big.
It is big.
It's not
dominant. It's bigger than what I thought, to be perfectly honest.
It's not dominant, but it's big. And what they've done, and this is where it starts making maybe a little sense, and maybe they can monetize it at some level, is they added more and more value to the proposition. So it's not simply a messaging chat where you can send some smileys and little this and that. Suddenly it becomes a comprehensive platform that's simple and easy to use. And I must say, what was cool about the event? Most events we go to, you get there, they give you a little speechifying, lots of drinks, some cool things, USB on the way out, and ciao. Then you've got to go home and figure out the product for yourself after the fact. The entire event was built around their wallet, which was absolutely brilliant. You arrive, they gave you cash and a... funny little drink.
Yeah, and so then, you had to scan a voucher code, which is attached to a cocktail that they gave you, and that then topped up your WeChat wallet with funds. And then the whole idea, of course, is that you went around buying drinks and paying for different services, your food, et cetera, using
And we even voted for wallet. DJs using the
by donating, money,
by donating
to, yeah.
money to them.
Now, you know, I think that, you know, that was novel in itself, but it also showed up a number of problems with the platform. And I think that it's, you know, granted, still in a first release kind of phase at the moment. So it was a little bit laggy when it came to the Wi-Fi. I mean, the moment you switched off of the Wi-Fi, it worked pretty logically.
Their Wi-Fi wasn't great.
Ironically enough, it works very, very similar to what M-Pesa now works. I spent some time in Kenya a month or so ago, and it's amazing how when you're out at a bar, you M-Pesa the bar person the cash for the drinks, and they bring your drinks and it's sorted. Or they bring your drinks and then you pay them with M-Pesa and it's done. It was a similar arrangement at the bar. You'd scan a little tag around the barman's neck, right, and they had their little crappy feature phone that would immediately receive an SMS,
and
because
exactly
you were paying with Snapchat, right?
The
SnapScan. We've got to stop saying Snapchat.
SnapScan.
We are paying with SnapScan. But it's it very, very slick ecosystem in terms of that. A couple of other interesting things. You can, you know, of course, buy airtime for all of the networks right now, buy data packages, and pay your prepaid electricity.
I think they've read the market well. I think there's a space for them, and good luck. The whole platform is done in conjunction with Standard Bank. We still have that hassle in South Africa.
Yeah, you have to have a banking
partner,
for sure.
There's got to be a banking partner. But the other feature that was really interesting, there's no cost at all for receiver or sender to transfer money.
Yeah, but the moment you cash out
costs you money. Sure. But if you to get money into the system and to use it in the system is free.
I think is
quite a big, I don't know how they do it, but it's quite a big differentiator.
I mean, I'm still trying to, you know, maybe I'm a skeptic from the perspective that I think there's got to be critical mass in order for this to work. I mean, it's a great idea. In that you have the ability to send money to other people on the platform, which is quite easy, and you can pay for a lot of those things that, let's face it, you can pay for in like 100 other ways also. So that's the, you know, question for me is around how they're going to get traction. It works in practice, that's fine, but there are so many other alternatives. And to be perfectly frank with you, it was actually quite frustrating at one stage when the Wi-Fi was falling over at the event. We were like, can we just give you cash for our drinks, please? Because it took us 5 minutes to get to pay for the thing. And then at the end of the evening, of course, I had a complete fail when it came to cashing out, because they had a mobile Standard Bank ATM there. Part of the experience was whatever you had left in your wallet, you could then go to the ATM and you could
get it
key
out.
In the code generated by the application, and it would spit out the cash. And what happened for me was, I mean, and there's still, a bit of fine-tuning that needed to take place on the ATMs, UX, and whatever the case is. But essentially, it generated a voucher code on the application for the monetary value I was trying to withdraw. And then the concept is you type in that voucher code into the ATM and it dispenses the cash. And it charges you 10 rand per cash out, regardless of value, right? So that's a transaction fee, which...
which is not bad value.
Not bad, but if you're at the top end of the scale, it makes sense. If you're trying to cash out 50 or 60 bucks, it's kind of steep. But nonetheless, you can cash out in any denomination of 10. However, last night it had to be in denominations of 100 because apparently that's all they had in the ATM. The interesting thing is when I entered the code,
you couldn't fit the ATM in the back of your car.
No, it was actually mounted in the back of a car. It was quite interesting. But the moment I tried to cash out and I entered the voucher code, something went wrong in that process, and it actually didn't dispense any cash. Right, and this is where the big UX problem comes in. So it says, oh, no, the transaction's failed. I take a look at my WeChat wallet, and the money that I was trying to withdraw is gone. There's 40 bucks left in the account now. I'm like, okay, that's kind of concerning, and I have no cash in my hand. Then there's a little person standing by to say, oh, no, let me explain to you what just happened there. So what happened is the ATM couldn't dispense because of one or another technical reason. I think there was network connectivity issues or something to that effect. But what we'll do is you just go to any other ATM and type that code, and it'll work, all right? It failed twice more. And now what's happened is the voucher code is locked. So I've got a monetary value locked up in a virtual piece of code that I can't use, that I've got to wait 72 hours till the voucher expires and the money gets re-returned into the account, and then you can, unless you phone the call center. But I would not know any of this
if the guy,
wasn't standing there, right? I'd be panicking and I'd be having a shocking experience. Basically,
the system just stole your money.
Yes, and where's my money? And then I'd be phoning the call center in absolute panic, and then they'd explain the concept to me. But what I'm saying is that is, for me, really, really bad user experience. And that's stuff that, unfortunately, you can only figure out by testing this.
But then again,
having said that, they launched this in 3 months.
Yeah.
From idea to execution took them 3 months. So that's fantastic. That's really, really great job. But it's
you either get it right with money, you don't have a second
chance. Exactly, and with money, you
just don't have a second chance. You screwed
up. But people have no sense of humor or no patience when it comes to money.
You take my 10 rand and I'm going to go and shoot the bull.
Absolutely.
So it's a real challenge. And I think if you step away from the whole mobile money thing, there's no question that in the future, you know, back in hover cars and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to the future 2020, money will exist in very different forms. And it's so logical that money will be able to be used and applied through a mobile device of some sort. So all these solutions are sort of playing around the fact that we are going mobile. We don't see Apple Pay in this country. We may see Samsung Pay. And did you hear the rumor? Not rumor. In fact, LG have launched LG Pay in Korea.
Oh, wow.
So the dematerialization of credit cards and money is on the cards. But it's coming. And which platform's going to win, how it's going to win, I'm not sure. But interestingly, and a point made last night, is that it has to be a process that's so similar to the normal process of paying that it's painless. And they seem to have got, I would say, 85% of the way there on this. And we're going to see. So all these platforms are happening, and I think they're all learning, and Standard Bank as an institution are learning what works and what doesn't work. But we're going to see it. It's going to come. At some point, you're just going to haul out your watch or your device, and your payments will be done in a way that there's no money, and there's no cards, and there's no platform other than what you use on a day-to-day basis. So I think they're brave. I think it's a good proof of concept. And time will tell if it actually hits the sort of mass traction that they need to actually make it work.
Well, you see, this is what my concern is largely about this. Is it, like I say, it's functional. It's there. It works. I can see a reason for it to exist. All right. But the problem is it's being launched into a market where there are a number of other things that are already in place and a number of other ways to transact, et cetera, et cetera. For me personally, it's not important to be carrying money around in a wallet that sits on my phone. For me, it's far more convenient having money located in my bank account and having something like a Snap scan or like an FNB GeoPay capability or whatever the case is,
any one of them,
that on demand can take money out of my bank account and put it in somebody else's bank account, payment for services, whatever the case is. Now, you know, give me a second in terms of this, because I can see how there's an immediate need for this kind of thing in other markets. South Africa actually has a very, very advanced banking system.
Super sophisticated.
Right? Money travels from one account to another account very quickly.
Well,
right?
For example, if this platform is huge in China. Huge in China. Not the exact system, but the WeChat wallet, where they've got most of their users, is huge in China. I think the key is to have as many functions integrated within one platform that makes the user not have to worry about lots of different things.
Right, you see, but that's inadvertently what starts happening. Now I've got Snap Scan, now I've got WeChat wallet, I have
FNB wallet, there's a million.
And then there's MasterPass, verified by Visa, you know, not an app, but a mechanism to make sure that a whole bunch of stuff's going on there. Then you've got the virtual cards from Zazu. And so we start there's a lot of stuff that's gone on, and it's exciting and it's interesting.
From a tech point of view, it's super cool. But from a user point of view, it's a nightmare.
And it becomes really, really complex when it comes to the merchant. So again, we were outlining this with LG system and Samsung system and Apple system, and Huawei, I think, is working on a payment system.
I have no
doubt. So now there needs to be some form of common denominator when it comes to the merchant, because for me as a user, I can totally buy into the concept of whatever ecosystem I buy into personally. I've got an Apple phone and an Apple Watch, or I've got a Samsung device and a Sony watch, because those are Android and they'd work nicely together, and possibly all of that kind of stuff will work. support on the merchant side, oh my word.
Well, that's
right?
The only
this is where, and this is where it doesn't work, is because all of those companies do not play well at one point, and that's where it's going to break down.
Some little thing. Well, look, time will tell. I think we should.
But that's why Apple will win this in the States, and they're already winning it in the States.
And in Europe,
because
too.
Because of how pervasive the devices are.
Well, you know what? And they take care of the little details. But as I said, the whole context of this whole money thing is that at some point, some platform is going to dominate. Like cash dominated, like Visa and MasterCard dominated the credit card space. I think there's a lot of action coming. So watch the space. I think we're going to see a lot of new systems, a lot of platforms come and go, and it'll all morph at some point into something that you won't believe you couldn't use, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
You think, how did I not use this, and how did I pay in any other way?
Sure.
But it's interesting, and we're moving into a cashless society. Not yet, probably not for a long time in Africa and South Africa, but in the end, it's a lot safer and a lot more convenient not to walk around with wallets full of cards and wallets full of cash.
Yeah, no, this is true.
And just have it in a convenient, easy-to-use thing. Because, you know the old story, 90%, in fact, it happened to me this week twice. I left home without my wallet, but I didn't leave home without my cell phone.
Well, so this is the thing. And, I mean, that's where something like a SnapScan or a MasterPass, at least for online stuff,
it saved me more than once. I mean, I landed up in a parking lot, no cash, no wallet. Used my phone with FNB e-wallet, sent money cashless to an ATM.
An ATM and pulled it out.
And pulled it out. So,
but you know
what?
I see things like SnapScan being really, really useful in the long term, because what I would really love to be able to do is walk up to a pay station, put my card in, scan a barcode, type in the amount, it gives me my card back, and I drive.
No,
I'd like. I can really see the value in a restaurant. Right. You don't want to go through too many steps. You want an app that when the bill comes, you scan it, you type in the tip amount, you hit go, you're done. You walk away, right? M-Pesa works like that, even though it's this massively lo-fi thing that's all SMS-driven. Okay?
But functionally it does exactly the same thing.
It's that simple to use. Anything that can mimic that fantastic, very, very easy to use,
kind of
way of doing things is going to be, it needs to be frictionless, and that's the thing. Anyway.
Just to segue away from that, and this actually works exactly the same way. During November, I went to an event in Dublin called the Web Summit. Now, they completely missold that to me, because it wasn't really a Web Summit. It was a startup summit. And they had around about 1,800 startups over a period of 3 days, all shouting loudly and trying to flog their wares. But what just clearly came of the whole thing is that and they had guys from all over Europe, all over America, they even had a couple of guys from South Africa there. But what became super clear is that connectivity and pervasive connectivity and the ability to use a smart device for everything, I mean everything, was everywhere. And the Uberization of everything is so far advanced that there's an Uber for
Uberfication, they call it. Yeah.
Whatever. The Uberfication of everything. Everything
but I like Uberization.
Uberization.
Like
you do, yeah. They've Ubered everything. I mean, there was an Uber for cat food.
It's madness.
There was an Uber for expectant mothers. So you can plan your labor and use it like a thing to set up. Everything is becoming connected in a way that we can't even begin to understand.
Absolutely.
And the amount of startups and the amount of money that the VCs were throwing at these various startups was unbelievable. And I think so what we're seeing now is maybe one little product that fits into one little space, but the growth of this economy in terms of services on demand, when you want it, where you want it, how you want it, is just unstoppable. And it's going to change everything to do with tech. It's going to get smaller and smaller. You can see the rise of watches. And wearables and everything. It's just crazy how everything is happening that way. And the apps that are being written, even the South African apps, assume a level of connectivity, which we don't quite have in most of the developing world.
But from an urban context, we do.
No, we
this
do.
This is the thing. We have actually evolved in a huge way in terms of the reliability of our connectivity. It's I switched from the dual 25 meg Wi-Fi connections last night at this launch back to cellular, And bam, I had 4G. I had 4 bars of 4G. It was roaring, right? It constantly astounds me how quick the LTE connectivity and how pervasive the LTE connectivity is. And I've only really spent time in Johannesburg, Durban, and Cape Town recently. In the major everywhere you go, it's there.
No question. And our LTE is actually quite constrained by international standards.
This is true.
I mean, I'm luckily enough heading off to Singapore, and apparently their minimum LTE standard there is somewhere between 20 and 30 meg down and up, with the average sitting in the 80 to 90 space. So, all right, it's a tiny little island, much more constrained, lots of money, very high end, but still, South Africa, as much as you say it's really pervasive, you don't realize how constrained we are for lots and lots of good reasons. But the fact is, urban South Africa and South Africa has tremendous infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Whereas many countries which give you the point here is that we don't have the scale to make something like mobile money work in isolation.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's
so
got to be.
And that's the whole thing.
There needs to be a full ecosystem in place.
None of these services work in isolation. Mm. And why the South African companies were exhibiting at a place like Web Summit is to try to get international scale. So
absolutely, yeah.
It was fascinating to see.
No, you have
it was
to
just
look,
fascinating
you have
to understand where they're going.
I think any startup now needs to... You know, at least in their business plan, be building for Africa at the very least. You can't just build for the South African context. If you build for the South African context, you are not going to provide what the VCs need here in terms of investment, because they're all in the business for big exit. That's why they're going to put money behind you, not because they want to be part of something that's going to be remarkable or whatever the case is. They're business people, right? They're going to take a gamble on you. They want big exits. You're not going to get big exits if your scale stops at South Africa. You have to be able to scale at the very least across Africa, right? And
take it elsewhere.
And at least be able to have some ambitions of scaling internationally. Otherwise, there's not going to be an exit. You're not going to find a competitor in South Africa or in Africa. But the moment you hit overseas, you're going to find a competitor.
That's
and that's when it gets fun, because that's when the exits come, is because people take each other out and buy each other out.
Correct.
So that they don't have a competitor anymore. Maybe the tech is better and they integrate that in. But that's how that game works. And it's very, very clear. So many startups I'm finding are going, well, we're trying to solve this problem in this context. And I go, well, that's great, but you're going to struggle to find money and you're going to struggle to make money.
And there's no sustainability in it, unfortunately.
Conversely, all right, social good startups need to be very hyper-local. In my opinion. So stuff that's affecting change can be doing so at a township or a town or a city level, because it relies on the...
You're right, but the platforms that those systems are based
absolutely.
On are still
need
all
to
about
be international.
Scale,
yeah, absolutely.
All about size, all about ubiquity, and that's where it just gets super, super interesting. But the startup scene in South Africa, unfortunately, is highly constrained by our sheer distance and lack of resources within the country. But,
sure.
I mean, that's a whole other discussion.
Let's take that resource discussion in an interesting direction, at least in terms of what I think is. I've done I recently did a feature on cloud, and I had the opportunity to speak to some people that run some data centers, some people that have data centers and have cloud hosting environments inside it, other people that are looking to do that. And what I found absolutely fascinating, and it ties into what I want to speak to in a little bit, is you've actually got a bandwidth glut in South Africa now. Nobody's kind of aware of this right now. So, let me dial this back for a second.
I think context to this. Bandwidth glut where?
Okay, a bandwidth glut from an international perspective.
Ah, no question. And there's a new cable coming.
Yes.
The ACE cable from France
is on its way. So here's the thing, right? We've been waiting so long for fiber. Okay, fiber's here. Fiber's rolling out by the metric ton, all right? There's so much fiber going into the ground. There's houses being lit all the time, right? Areas where there is no fiber, Telkom's doing a great job of putting LTE coverage down there, right?
No question.
And let's face it, the only reason I'm mentioning Telkom by name is Telkom's the only telco that's actually offering a compelling value proposition in terms of connecting your home with LTE. The other guys are too expensive. Yeah. They focused on handset.
Well, interestingly,
they're actually not giving you big, affordable bundles.
Vodacom are offering high-value bundles at competitive to Telkom rates.
No,
they haven't made a huge
noise
about
it. The only people that have got an uncapped solution
Not uncapped. Yeah. Yes, but I'm saying high-value bundle.
Oh, absolutely.
Vodacom have now come up with a couple of LTE solutions, but they haven't pushed them that hard.
100, 150 gig, 200 gig,
yeah.
that kind
yeah,
of level?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
yeah. At some
right.
of the money. to, you know, $6.99, $7.99, $8.99. So there is some competition coming. The difference is they have to be careful. They don't have enough spectrum.
Yes.
Whereas Telkom,
well, Telkom's sitting on a bucket load of spectrum.
Tons of spectrum.
But anyway, so you've got fiber going in on the one side, LTE going on the other side, right? Okay, and LTE, I mean, I'm so delighted with my LTE at home. I get like 80 megabits per second.
Nothing shabby.
Uncapped,
about that.
And I'm paying very, very little for it. So I'm extremely. In fact, fiber can't compete with the price level I've got at home right now. There's a ridiculous special from Telkom on that front. But. Here's the interesting thing. It's like everybody's suddenly getting 100 megabit connections to the internet. Okay. Everybody's doing speed tests. They're showing 100 megabit connection to the internet. Okay. Okay. And yet more fiber rolls out and more people do more speed tests on their new 100 meg lines. And somehow they get fantastic throughputs on it. So here's the thing. It's like we've been bitching for so long.
Correct. About such international internet.
So what happened was we had this, you know, we've been saying it's the cost of the international stuff, right? Now, with so much local connectivity going in and fast local connectivity going in, right, now there's finally this demand for international bandwidth. But the guys have bled so long on it, and it's so competitive because so many international cables have gone in. Huge bidding war.
Terabytes.
Prices are,
there's,
I mean,
terabytes
guys
of connectivity.
Guys are absolutely bleeding in the infrastructure space at
but
the moment
that's
because
exactly what
that's what we
in
want
the
as
early
consumers.
2000s in Europe. Everyone laid fiber. They all thought they could make money. It never scaled. They all went bankrupt. And all this cheap fiber was in the ground for people. And it changed the game. Because suddenly, the actual cost of the fiber was zero.
Yeah.
Every cent they made post the crash was money for jam. Well, we won't even talk about those guys. But the fact is, the whole model changed completely. So we're now sitting in that same model. They're throwing land grab all over the urban areas to lay fiber and businesses. So
We are going to see massive slashing of prices.
Yeah, don't lock yourself.
Over the next
people,
years.
Don't lock yourself into
a
2-year contract.
Here's the thing. If you do lock yourself into a 2-year contract, I will remind you of this. Because everybody's berated me for doing this 2-year LTE contract with Telkom.
No, but that was a steal, boy.
No, but here's the thing with that, right? There will be cheaper connectivity down the line. There will be cheaper connectivity
and from Telkom.
And yes, this will be a 2-year contract, all right? But at the end of the day, all right, there's a fantastic law passed a little while back that essentially says that all they can nail you for is the cost of the equipment, all right? So look at the cost of the equipment. In my case, that modem. LTE modem, all right,
what,
at full retail price.
Grand.
No, at full retail price is like 800 rand, what do you mean?
Okay, so it's neither here nor
right?
there.
Amortized over 2 years. Okay, that's why it's as cheap as what it is. So in a year's time, if I decide I want out, I give
them
400 rand and I walk away.
And that's a month's payment in any event.
Exactly. They can, I mean, I'm paying $600 a month right now. They cannot nail you for a future loss of revenue. And that boat sailed. It's the same reason Cell C can buy you out of contract because, or, you know, buy you out of another contract.
Because
all they're paying
can do nothing about it.
Is they're paying the handset cost, what's left of the handset cost. And that's why you've seen this restructuring in terms of how cellular contracts are done. So if you're going to enter into a contract, know what the cost of the CPE is or the connectivity bit, the router or whatever they give you, and make sure you're prepared to pay that in one shot to get out of your contract. Hey, you get to keep the equipment, so that's fine, and it's probably usable across something else. But that's why I'm not concerned about it. Everybody's like, laboring, a 2-year contract. What happens is, and that's the other thing about South Africans that I find absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, they moan a lot and do nothing.
If there's a service for $400 in the market and they're locked into a contract for 600 rand, man, will they bitch. Till the cows come home. They won't look at it positively and go, I had so much better service before you, Oaks.
Correct.
So anyway.
And then pay your 200 grand to get out.
Long story short, I find it so interesting at the moment, and I think that all of the fiber providers are starting to find the same. I think what's interesting is there's a massive investment right now going into local backbones.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
Oh, yeah,
and
no question.
The next big thing, all right, is not international cable, right, is a cable across Africa, internal cable that are connecting countries inside Africa across. There are cables in place, but I think this is the next big. This is the next big land grab.
What we don't have, funny enough, we've got north-south cables, quite a lot of them, because the easy cable uses both a redundancy across the continent on land and sea.
Yes,
but we don't have east-west.
Yeah,
there are very few east-west African cables at the moment.
We are going to see a massive set of investment that's going to go into connecting all of these countries together
you know
with
why?
Cable.
You know why? It's so simple. Everyone misses this. If you want to deliver high-speed mobile broadband, you cannot do it unless you've got infrastructure and fiber in the ground.
Sure.
And they're going to have to go from tower to tower to tower. I mean, at Africacom recently, they were trialing and showing the new 5G technology.
Mm.
When I was at World Mobile beginning of this year, I think you were there with me.
Yes.
We saw some of the 5G stuff, and I mean, it filled rooms. It was huge.
Huge stuff. It's massive. A couple of little racks.
No, it's a suitcase. It's a suitcase.
Yeah, there we go.
So in 3 months, they've gone from racks and rooms full of equipment down to a suitcase.
Yep.
By March next year, it'll probably be down to a little shoebox.
Be the size of your iPad.
Well, yeah, more or less. Mm. And give it a year from there, the product will actually be commercially viable.
Yeah.
So whether we like it or not, the world's going ultra-high-speed broadband.
That's great.
And Africa has to roll out one thing it doesn't have, infrastructure. So
the quickest way to put infrastructure in is wireless. But at the same time, you cannot...
Last-mile infrastructure.
Exactly, last-mile infrastructure. But you cannot fight with fiber right now. And the reason I'm so bullish and so really, really excited about all of this fiber going in across Africa is a couple of things. The first thing is it affects the lot. It's a full play, all right? It can carry voice. Right. It can carry TV and all forms of video, all right, and really, really bandwidth-intensive stuff. Everything at the end of the day is going to go in some way, immune or form over the internet. I mean, I've started relooking at my cell phone contracts, right, and pushing more and more and more at data because I'm realizing that I'm chewing up so much voice that I could be using data in lieu of voice. I can be pushing all of my voice over data. The number of people that are WhatsApp calling me
It's growing exponentially.
It's huge. Skyping to mobile.
Well, you know,
if you've got LTE, it's cleaner. It's a better quality experience.
Can I have a quick rant? Give me 5 seconds.
Totally.
I am one of these fortunate people that have in my case a Vodacom SIM and a Cell C SIM.
And you've got that with the other one.
Me and you mobile, which is Cell C. So I've got a Cell C SIM through Me and You Mobile, a Vodacom SIM, Telkom SIM, and MTN SIM. Now, to have a conversation of more than 35 seconds, and if you're lucky, 5 minutes on MTN,
absolutely,
wherever you go, is a nightmare.
Stand still.
Yeah.
Do not move.
It doesn't matter if you don't move. If you're sitting at your desk talking, it just says cell phone signal lost.
This is on MTN?
On MTN.
Okay.
Vodacom's voice quality sucks. You can't hear a thing.
Well, you can tell the difference whether you're on voice over LTE or not, because it sounds like the person is standing inside your head.
Yeah,
it is that clear.
As opposed to nothing.
All right.
As opposed to...
Yeah. CB radio.
Yeah, it's back to the days of,
Smokey. Cans and string, yeah.
Smokey. Hey-ho, Smokey. Anyway.
Yeah.
The best voice quality that I've got across the country, and I've been to quite a few places right now, has been our dear friends at Cell C.
Amazing, huh?
Unbelievable, unbelievable. And if you've got uncapped voice, which I've got on Cell C through this Me and You Mobile, 350 Rand a month. 350 Rand a month,
that's
uncapped
ridiculous.
Voice. I've now, instead of making WhatsApps or anything, I just phone people. They're astonished. And I have no problem with it.
Absolutely.
So the networks have to do something. LTE on MTN, LTE on Telkom is good. Telkom's outstanding, but on Vodacom is good. LTE now is available. Oh, they announced, Cell C have now announced that for the holiday period, LTE is going live in Cape Town, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's because the heart of Joburg is relocating to Cape Town.
Absolutely. Well, we all, thank goodness, I'm not moving down there. But anyway, so you'll have LTE in Cape Town. Their LTE is good, not spectacular, but good. But the voice quality, I must say, is amazing. And the networks need to do something about this because it's real problem. Anyhow, my little rant.
Okay, there we go.
Networks, if you listen to this podcast, get your act together. Come on now.
I want to speak about something else you mentioned.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Africacom just now, and this is something that I think is quite exciting. I was lucky enough to sit in a presentation with Ericsson, who've launched a new TV, or in the process of launching a new TV service, or a video service. Now, here's something interesting. I had absolutely no idea that Ericsson is one of the top 5 media and content players in the world.
Did you not know that?
No. It's like one of the best kept secrets. They operate massive, massive distribution networks, which makes sense. But beyond that, they have content curation, entire services that they run
Tandberg
on behalf of big... Yeah, there we go.
Many years ago, they bought a company called Tandberg. Tandberg were the biggest video-on-demand people in North Europe.
That's right.
So all this capability sits in there. And then, you were saying about what they're announcing.
And they're launching something called NewView that I think is quite exciting. So, we've had a great year in South Africa in terms of new things from a TV launching. We've had ontap.tv. We've had
Showmax,
which
is the big brother.
The one before that is VD. That launched first. We've had a bunch of really, really cool service, and we're waiting for Hulu and Netflix to arrive. I think it's imminent.
You didn't hear this on this podcast, but Netflix content.
Well, it's currently being trialed in South Africa.
Is already on servers in the country.
In the country, yeah.
Right here, and I won't say which servers, but they're sitting somewhere between Joburg and Midrand.
Yeah. If you do the math, you'll figure out where it is. There's only one place it really can be sitting right now. A vendor neutral. We have said too much.
We've said too much. But bottom line is, Netflix is in the country. It's available. You stream it. You can, if you knew how, you could actually stream from a local server. So it's imminent.
And it is being tested, and I've spoken to people that have said exactly that they're in testing at the moment. Yeah. So the arrival of that is imminent. But I think what's interesting is, all right, we still live in a country and a continent where data costs, even though they're coming down, are going to be too high to make this kind of product accessible to the average man in the street. Ericsson with NewView, and I still don't understand how they're getting to do this, because it is absolutely mental. No, I understand the model behind it, but it's still, the economics don't make sense at that level to me. But anyway, they're launching with Airtel in Nigeria this first quarter of 2016, and they've committed to, they will have it in four other countries with four other telcos before the end of 2016. I'm really hoping South Africa is one of them. And from the discussions I've had with them, apparently there are some discussions taking place on a local level.
Well,
with both telcos.
Vodacom, look, remember MTN's got front row. So yeah. And they already zero rate the data on it.
Yeah.
Vodacom have already said that they're going to do a similar thing soon. They haven't announced when. So maybe they're talking to Ericsson about this. Because availability of content and using the network smartly is clever.
So, but hang on. I haven't even said what it is yet.
I know. That's right.
So it's TV and series, but premium TV and series, right? They're like two DVD space. So the same way they call it SVOD, I think it is. Yeah. So that phase of the release cycle. So when something goes to DVD, it now becomes available on video on demand.
So three to six months after launch.
All right, yeah. Okay. It's all premium content, but a lot of local content thrown in there as well, which Ericsson's managed to pull off on account of the fact that they're this big content player in the world. But it's going to be, wait for it, all right, $5
a month.
Per month, including
data
costs.
Yeah,
so you will pay $5, depending on the exchange rate at any point in time, and when you're listening to this podcast, anywhere between 70 and 80 rand, roughly, a month.
Below 100 rand.
Below 100 rand, I think, is a sweet spot. All right. Couple of caveats. All right. First is, it's only 480p. All right.
But remember, it's focused on handsets.
Not 720p. It's focused on handsets and tablets, so that's the first thing. But that's a self-imposed limitation. They have the ability to scale all the way up to 4K on the back end because the system has been built for that. And as the networks adapt, how they're getting to this data thrown in model, I think, is quite remarkable. It's not streaming, right?
No,
it could stream,
but it doesn't. It does stream on Wi-Fi.
Yes. The interesting bit for me is that it uses off-peak and low-peak data capacity. So. The reality is all of the networks have got pretty much low peak and dead time on their networks right now, where the data networks are not being used, right? But it's a static cost, okay? Oh. It's not like they pay per megabyte they push across the network.
Call it sunk cost. There we go. It exists.
So the point is, you'll flag a movie for download. If you're over Wi-Fi, it'll stream down immediately and you can start watching it. If not, what it'll do is it'll use all of those off-peak little bits and pieces and manage the overall capacity of the network, so the network is running at a high capacity load constantly, but it'll almost prioritize some data over other data, and when there's headroom to push data down to phones in the form of movies and stuff like that, it'll do that, and then when it's ready you can watch it. So this is the thing, it's not like it's going to cost the networks any more or any less to do this. All right, the interesting thing is that the revenue stream sits in the content licensing and not the other way around. But, and this is the other thing people don't realize about content licensing, all right? Content licensing is not licensed on a per-user basis. This is old school. Hollywood goes, oh, you would like to distribute our content in South Africa. They don't go, how many users? They go, it's going to cost you X. Right? Whether you have one user or 10 million users, that's the cost for South Africa. So Ericsson was unbelievably smart in terms of this. A, they're the only player that could do it because they run most of the networks across Africa anyway in one way or another. It's either running on their kit or they've got consultants actually managing those networks. They consult very heavily to the overall optimization of those networks. So they're right in there. So they're the only guys that know enough about what the networks actually look like from a traffic and a load perspective to be able to go, well, here is a solution for you, all right, Mr. Network. We know how your network works. We can roll this out on top of your network, and it's not going to affect anything. So that's thing one. They're also a trusted player and a trusted advisor to those networks already.
No question.
And the third thing is, the only way you can make this kind of thing a reality and make any sense whatsoever in the context of the $5 a month is at scale. Massive scale. You need users. The only people with those kinds of users are banks and cell phone networks. And guess what? They're pretty much interchangeable for each other these days.
The one thing that a lot of people don't really realize, and unfortunately we still have a hangover in this country with regard to data. Everyone sees data as a discrete product. So in other words, you pay X amount of money for X amount of data. So they treat it a little bit like a fine wine. You buy this fine Merlot of 5 gigs, bam, and you pay X amount of money. But that's not how data works. When you build a network, you build it for a capacity, a couple of terabytes, whatever it is. If you don't use that capacity per meg, it costs you more money than using it fully.
The thing. Absolutely.
So,
because you actually, it's revenue lost, it's potential revenue lost.
Well, it's not even revenue lost. It costs you 100 million rand to supply 100 gig, let's say, for example.
Yes.
If you don't, it doesn't cost you any less to supply 50 gig.
Yeah, because 100 gig's the entry level. Yeah.
Because that's what you got. So what all the networks have to do and what they've discovered they need to do is give away as much data as is humanly possible in a manner that that allows the networks to operate at 80 to 90% capacity,
sure,
and then they make money.
Absolutely.
If they don't, if they're operating at 30% capacity, they're making no money.
But the reality is, all right.
Now, the first guys to get with you guys. You helping them get to capacity. Aren't
great.
You a nice guy?
No, for sure. They can send me a check to say thank you. But that's the point.
They do. They're probably subsidizing your connection.
No, that's the point. It costs them no more money to be at 30% utilization than what it does at 90% utilization. But the difference is you're likely to make a little bit more at 90% utilization than what you are at 30%.
It actually costs them. At 30% utilization, they're putting money into their network every month. At 90% utilization, which translates into more and more people using the services, the people are putting money into the network. So the whole thing is turned up on its head.
It's one of those things about recording in summer is you want you want the door open
aircon,
and you want this little breeze. No,
aircon.
You know, aircon makes you sick.
We're going green here. We're going green on
I think
ZA Tech Show.
Mr. Ambrose.
Let's talk some gadgets quickly.
Let's quickly do some picks of the week and then wrap this one up. And
Well, you know what? Here's the cool thing. Because we haven't talked about all these things, I've got like a whole host of picks of the week.
Okay, you've got to make them short. We're 17 minutes away from hard cutoff
hard
of an
cutoff.
Hour.
Okay, my first and super pick of the week, no question. I've been playing with tons of mobile phones. And 2 to 3 phones at the high end have impressed the hell out of me. My absolute favorite right now is the iPhone 6S. There's no question they're expensive. It's hard to justify the cost of these devices, but the fact is the experience using this phone is by far the slickest, smoothest, fastest, and most useful of any phone that I've used. Coming in a really surprising close second was the Galaxy Note 5. I must tell you that they've untouch-whizzed it to the point of almost pleasure. not entirely.
It's touch really sad when your selling point or the thing that the analysts and the journalists and the market commentators like most about your phone is the removal of any form of individuality you'd spent 10 years adding into it.
It's ridiculous.
Well, listen, this is politically incorrect, but this sums up the... There's apparently been a meme running around on the internet with Samsung and Apple. Let me try get it right. Basically, Tim Cook said, look, I'm gay and we've got great product. And Samsung had a whole marketing campaign saying, I'm gay and we've got even greater product. So...
I'm gay. I don't know, really.
No, I'm just saying that whatever Apple is, Samsung tries to be absolutely a little bit better with a little bit more.
Fire the entire exec team and
start
find,
again. Yeah. So, but I will say one thing. As absolutely superb the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus is, and I'm using a 6S Plus now, the new generation of Note 5 and Note Edge phones from Samsung are pretty spectacular. The build quality is exceptional. There has been, I've heard, a couple of issues around reliability, but I suppose tech products break every now and then. But the user interface they've cleaned up, it's almost pure Android, which is a pleasure. I must say Android's come a long way. Still a bit fussy, a little bit noisy, perhaps not my cup of tea always, but it's got to the point where the camera, the screen quality, the build quality, the slickness of use, the speed... I mean, these mini computers in your hand is pretty amazing. And the other thing, my next pick of the week, an absolute favorite of mine of late, has been something that I've been spending a little bit of time with in the last couple of weeks, and that is a tablet. Now, tablets are like, meh. Everyone's got tablets. Everyone's had tablets for ages.
Just remember to take them each morning. Anyway,
yeah, when you get old like this man, you've got to take all your tablets every morning.
Man, tell you know,
take your pills, Sonny. Anyway, this is a technological tablet, and it comes from a little company called Lenovo. You heard of them?
Yeah, sure.
Number one in the world in gadgets and whatnot. And I've been playing with the Yoga
tablet,
the Yoga Tab 3 Pro.
Okay,
that's the one with a built-in projector.
Ah, yes.
Now, it's naff. You think, hey, built-in.
Who wants
a projector? But...
When you're lying, I won't bash the table. When you're lying in a hotel room...
I watched a whole movie at AfricaCom.
Fantastic. Super.
I popped it on.
Love it.
Showed a 55-inch picture on the wall. It was bright. It was clear. And the battery still gave me nearly 11 and a half hours battery life. It is an absolutely spectacular little device. It's inexpensive. In the context of tablets, it's under 10 grand. It's got a built-in decent quality projector. It's got a really nice interface. The screen is ultra HD. It's just such a smart product. And I mean, if you're in sales and you want to show people stuff, it works really well in normal lit rooms. I'm absolutely blown away at how a simple thing that you wouldn't think would make a big difference has changed a product line.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It's just so,
I'm finding that,
so clever.
I'm finding that all the time with products. I think this is the thing, is we get so much feature fatigue and there's so much product and tech fatigue that when there's a tiny little thing that somebody stopped and thought...
Yeah, let's do something
and then
smart.
Refine slightly. Yeah. And it's the tiniest little features that make
Because this
make
is their second
exciting.
Generation one. The first one, the camera, the first gen was not so great. The battery life wasn't brilliant. The screen wasn't great. And the camera, the projector itself was okay at a push. But this projector really, in a dark room, is super good. It's HD and it works really well. In a bright room, it's for presentations and, you know, it's not like high quality. But the difference is you take your tablet, you put Microsoft Office on it, you go and do a presentation. You don't need a laptop. You don't need to carry a projector. You've got everything on one little convenient device, and you forget to charge the damn thing. It's so good.
Yeah.
That's an 18-hour normal battery life. I mean,
it's mental.
It's mental. You forget to charge it. You think, when did I? And then you think, oh, damn, I'm going to a meeting. I didn't charge it. You have a look. You got 78% battery life. So
insanity.
It's just such a cool, cool, cool thing. And then my last real pick of the week, or the month, or the year, I don't know how many times we're doing this stuff.
At least attempt to record two more episodes in 2016.
Cool. is probably the coolest app, because everything's visual today. We're all posting pictures on Facebook. We're all posting pictures everywhere. The cameras, we won't even go into that. The cameras on smartphones are so good that generally you don't need to carry any other camera around. And that's Snapseed.
When did you last use Snapseed?
Oh, Snapseed's fantastic. I mean, the filters have gotten so good.
And the interface has become so slick and easy to use.
There are some beautiful tricks you can play. I mean,
it can't rescue crap photography, but absolutely. It can certainly make
it can make a okay decent pictures. Shot really, really brilliant. Good, yeah, for sure. And there's so much fun you can have with it. I mean, the other app that in that space that I really enjoy is Over. I mean, Over.
Over.
Over. You're not played with Over.
No, I haven't played with Over. No, I'll make a note of that. Over so and out, people. Over
it's,
and
out. It's a fantastic app developed by a bunch of dudes that actually moved to South Africa from the States. Yeah, for sure.
Clever connection.
Based in Slaapstad. And it allows you to put cool captions and quotes and stuff like that over your images. It's fantastic. That's what it's called, Over. It's great. Play with it. I think it's great. It's a really good
app. Snapseed to make your pictures all cool. And then the last thing that I must just mention. Sorry, last thing.
I've got one pick. Stephen Ambrose.
But you'll talk a long time. I'll be very cool. If you wanted my best smartphone of the year, everyone's asked me, so which is your absolute favorite and which
you
is your best
iPhone
smartphone?
You said iPhone 6S.
That's my favorite.
And Galaxy Note 5. You've got two other ones in your list.
I'm going to throw another one in the mix from LG.
Oh, yeah. It's
not just one phone. I'm going to talk about a series of phone, the G4 series of phone. I'm sure we're now at the end of the year, but we're going to have G5s next year. But
a camera.
In the world of sameness, glass and steel and very similar products. I mean, you put all these phones down on a table, they all look the same.
Sure.
Except for one. And the LG's got this cool
stitched
leather back.
Yeah,
just a whole sort of human vibe that I just absolutely loved. And what they get right... And this is where our dear friends at Samsung perhaps missed the boat a little. Both are Android-based, but LG seemed to make it just that much easier to use the phone and to exploit the features than the other guys. So the G4 series is definitely, that's the G4, the G4 Beat, and the Stylus. Well-priced, really well-priced in the context of our fantastic Rand. Cameras that are absolutely top-notch. And apps built in that make things actually easier for you. They make your life pretty slick and easy. So that's my ultimate pick. If you want to know, you're looking for a phone that's 99.9% of everything else everyone else does, still Android based and has a personality. It's actually cool. I think LG have just nailed it.
Well, I feel like the kid that has the lame excuse about the dog ate his homework. Stephen stole so many of my picks here.
I apologize.
No. Well, not it. I think that these are all fantastic picks. I want to add a couple to the list very quickly.
Man.
And I mean, everybody's going to go, oh, fanboy. I love my Apple Watch. I think it's great. What I love about the Apple Watch is how it doesn't get in my face. All right. I've got every other wearable. I've tested them all of the Android devices, et cetera, et cetera. What I don't like about them is the fact that...
Oh, they drive you mad.
So notifications are important. I need my notifications, all right, but I need them to be context aware. Okay. What I like about the Apple Watch is if I'm gazing at my phone and an SMS comes in, my arm does not buzz. Right? It knows, on account of the fact that I'm looking at my phone, that I'm aware of the fact that an SMS came in because it came into my phone, right? Little tiny things like that make it context aware, I absolutely love. The other thing I absolutely love about it is the fact that my phone and my watch now live permanently on silent. Right? I don't have ringtones because the nice thing is when my phone rings, when my phone rings, my arm buzzes.
So you're notified straight away?
It is far less intrusive. I'm really, really big at the moment on technology not intruding on social context and social situations, all right? Again, one of the things I love about having a smartwatch is that I don't have to be picking my phone up all the time.
Oh, no,
I can look for a gap in conversation, glance at my watch, and it switches on. It shows me what I need to know, and then I can turn and I can carry on with the conversation. I'm not being rude, right? I don't do it in the middle of a conversation to break eye contact with somebody. When somebody naturally looks away, then I have a little look, or it's just a little social cue that makes it fits into my life a lot
Apple
easier than the others.
Apple have nailed it in a way that it becomes a companion, not an intrusion.
God, and I'm the first person to say that it's flawed in so many ways.
I think
one of the major flaws is the fact that it doesn't have a GPS.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So it has this fantastic feature where you can load a gigabyte's worth of music onto it, stream it to a Bluetooth headset, and go for a run. Except for the fact that you can't map your run. All right. Now, I'm sorry. If you can't map your run, if you can't have a GPS tracking capability for your run, what's the point of having that run? So, I mean, little
I
things
say,
like
the
that we
sports
think
side
that they were
I don't use a lot of.
It is, I will say this, it is crazy accurate without the phone. I mean, it measures distance like unbelievably well. Because everything I blind test with, I've got a Garmin Forerunner 910 XT, so I blind tested against that and my TomTom cardio, right? And those are two very, very accurate devices because they've got GPS built in. And I must say, it's astoundingly accurate from that perspective. And there's stuff that works about it. There's stuff that doesn't work about it. But what I like most about it is the stuff it doesn't do. It doesn't get in my face with notifications. No, it allows me to leave everything in my life on silent and just fit my technology more nicely into social context, which I think works nicely for me.
No, I totally agree with you. I think it's a great pick. I've been wearing one for a couple of months, and I must say, it's hard not to enjoy it once you've got it. You just don't want to take it off, which is a sign of good tech.
Yeah. And then second pick. All right, I'm only going to do two. And full disclosure, I do some consulting work for Discovery. So not on this specific project, but on some other stuff. So I'm not punting a client for the sake of punting it. I'm punting because I'm also a Discovery client. But I absolutely love the way technology is starting to meld into the fitness world and the general healthiness world with Vitality. I've loved the way all of my fitness devices magically speak through the Discovery Vitality ecosystem, give me points that result in free smoothies. I mean,
I must check my smoothies.
So, on Wednesday, I physically had to go and cash in one of my vouchers because it was expiring on Wednesday. I mean, every week I'm just smashing my goal quite nicely. I mean, it's fantastic that they've built all of these dynamics and that you can get more mates involved and everything else. And it's really... They are understanding user behavior in a really, really big way.
Look, they've always been good. They're one of the few.
But they're also understanding how to bring technology and big data and user behavior and how they can actually start shifting stuff. I mean, of course, the other example is Ensure. We're with them now with Ensure. We've got the little box in the car. I mean, you know, we've discussed this. Stephen could never be on it because he drives like a maniac. But it has honestly shifted my user behavior because I'm getting like $400 or $500 back every single month in fuel now. And it's cash, straight back into my account. So, I mean, it stacks up. One for one with our previous insurer in terms of cost. The benefits are exactly the same, except that one major bonus is I get money back now on fuel. And it's fascinating to look. I'm a bit of a data freak. You've seen me with the fitness data.
Absolutely.
I have to analyze my fitness data and analyze my runs and look at this and speed and cadence and everything else. And now I'm getting that for driving. And I'm getting that for just going to gym and stuff like that. So that's fun. I must say, they've
improved the app. The UI is still a little messy.
I was going to say, you still need a better UI there, and I think they need to bring other products that sit inside their ecosystem together. I still don't understand why they've got a separate Ensure app and a separate Discovery app. But I think over time, they're understanding it better than most, and they're starting to pull it together. But, I think it's really, really good.
No, 100%.
Anyway.
I've just discovered it, and I've got my first... goal this week, so I have a smoothie waiting for me.
Have you added me to your team yet?
Yes, I did.
Okay, fantastic. Because that's the other thing, Stephen. If you hit your goal every week and I hit my goal every week,
we both score.
And we have another shared person that hits their goal every week. So let me explain it to you like this. If I hit my goal and two people in my team, all right, and you can have up to an extra five people in your team, also hit their goal, you earn a second free smoothie.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So it's pretty rare.
So it actually pushes everyone
to... get to gym, you lazy dog.
I missed yesterday, but today I'm going to hit my goal again, so don't you worry.
There we go. Okay, so...
Brilliant.
Stephen, thanks for hanging out. That was fun.
Absolute pleasure. Always good to talk tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was... It has been too long, and I apologize. I'm going to stop apologizing.
We've lost the rhythm.
I've been
super
busy. There are reasons for it. I mean, your family comes before anything else, and I needed to...
And you got
to
pay the bills.
Invest time in launching something new, but that's now starting to stabilize, and we should probably be able to squeeze out one more episode of the ZA Tech Show, if not two, for the end of the year. And I absolutely intend... I'm not going to commit, but I absolutely intend to get us back on track. We'll see how it goes. And catch you all soon. Cheers!